Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. I am fully aware that I should get rid of my social media, and yet I don't. I think one of the reasons why is because I like to keep tabs on the people in my life. I like to keep friends close, be able to communicate with people that I grew up with, maybe the ones that I don't see often but still want to know what they're up to. And truthfully, in some ways, it also helps me to know where people are at politically. I also keep social media because it kind of helps me stay outside of my own echo chamber when I've got acquaintances or friends or just people that I follow who don't feel the same way as me. I'm able to kind of see how people are talking, see what's on people's minds, what types of issues are they concerned with, instead of just being inside this bubble and assuming that everyone has the same concerns or is dealing with the same issues that I am. And that could be a frustrating experience, right? Because you watch as people that you care about or that you grew up with or whatever who can have some very different political thoughts or just otherwise general beliefs about the world, values, etc., etc. Well, one such example came this week as I was on Facebook and saw an acquaintance from high school who was posting about chemtrails. And they had done this multiple times. This is not the first time, posting about how, you know, the government, there's this big conspiracy that every time you see a contrail behind a plane in the air, that it must be the government trying to release chemicals into the atmosphere. She talks about how she feels more sick lately and how that is corresponding with an increase of the chemtrails that she is seeing. And I was not going to comment on it. I was just going to let it pass. But I saw it again the next day and I thought, hey, why not? We can have a reasonable conversation. And it did end up being a reasonable conversation. And it gave me some hope that people who are in their heads about certain conspiracy theories, some of them may still be willing to chat and have a conversation. There were lots of people in the comments to her post, some agreeing with her and some being quite outspoken about how they felt about her conspiracy here and not being very nice about it. She had said, you know, I don't know if this is controversial of me to feel this way or not, but here is what I'm seeing. And I basically responded and said, I don't think it's controversial. I simply think it's a conspiracy theory. And she responded with some stuff and I responded with some stuff. And anyway, in the end, I worked really hard to try and be respectful with her. And what it taught me, and this is something that I've seen time and time again, and it's that people on the opposite side of the political spectrum, I think, are often closer than we give them credit for in regards to the types of concerns that they have, in the knowledge about those concerns and why they're concerned, right? In this case, she was linking me to posts about geoengineering, and her big concern was about solar radiation management. And she didn't necessarily know those terms. She didn't necessarily understand the full picture, but I agreed with her. I said, hey, look, I also feel that solar radiation management and geoengineering is a major concern and something that, while I don't think that they are doing it widespread yet, is definitely something that we should be concerned about if they do go down this route. And those concerns are more widely on the potential impacts that they're going to have on our ecosystems, on climate change as a whole. I said, I think we agree overall on what the potential issue is. The only difference is that you think it's been, you know, it's being done now secretly behind the scenes as a conspiracy theory and that that's what the chemtrails are. And I think that it's something that scientists are seriously considering and that governments are going to resort to at some point in the future. Doesn't mean I changed her mind. Doesn't mean she's let that conspiracy go. People who are drawn to conspiracy theories in that way, you know, they're not easily swayed from that. I think at the very least, and her and I spoke about this, it's nice to be able to have a conversation with someone and know that you may not draw them away from their current beliefs, but that your conversation can be rational, it can be courteous, and you may both walk away having learned something new. Going back to that idea about people on the opposite side of the political spectrum, I think we have more in common with them than sometimes we let ourselves believe. And a big part of that is because the whole left versus right, or especially in the U.S., Democrat versus Republican thing, it's all contrived, right? It's all just man-made contention to keep the focus being on us fighting against each other rather than you know, down fighting versus up. The problem that we have in the U.S. is an up-down class issue, and they want us to view it as a left versus right issue. That is, of course, not to say that there aren't serious issues with the right, with many of the human rights and cultural issues that we're seeing. Those are massive issues, and they should be fixed. But, you know, I think even of Marjorie Taylor Greene and her resignation speech last week, that was fascinating because I found myself in so much of what she was saying, nodding my head in agreement. You know, she's talking about this idea that it should be an issue that we have with the billionaires. She talked about how politics has been made into such a way that if you are not part of the established political elite, then you are ostracized, that it's not about what the people vote for, that it's about what the wealthy want, and so on and so forth. And they're all things that I'm like, yeah, that's true. We agree on that. And at the same time, Marjorie Taylor Greene is someone who has constantly, you know, talked about Jewish space lasers and shrieked on about all sorts of different conspiracies. She's also very far right and has values and has voted for things that I do not agree with. If you go to the core of it all, if you ask a Republican and if you ask a Democrat what it is they truly want, most of them will tell you the same things. I want freedom. I want safety. I want the best for my family possible, etc., etc. Now, the method for going about that is very different, and that's where the differences come in. But I think if you ask the elite, if you ask the wealthy what they want, and if they were to answer truthfully, I think those answers would be very different. They want power. They want control. They want more wealth. And the freedom that they search for is the freedom to act in any way that they want without the will of the people, you know, as a part in that. All right. Sorry, I'm kind of on a tangent there because that's not actually what the episode's about. The episode, is going back to my conversation with this acquaintance on Facebook, is actually about this idea of geoengineering. She was deeply disturbed by the thought of chemtrails being geoengineering already taking place. And it got me thinking and wishing that she and others like her who are consumed by this concern for the government taking actions that they shouldn't, you know, wishing that they would understand all of the different types of geoengineering that exist. And with that, I learned about a new type of geoengineering this week that I had not previously understood, which is called natural geoengineering. I'm going to read, this is by Daniel Fulvey from The Conversation, and it's being reposted in the source I'm going to post here, which is in phys.org. It's titled, "Engineered Microbes Could Tackle Climate Change If We Ensure It's Done Safely." Like so many other geoengineering ideas, it sounds amazing. It gives you that dopamine hit of thinking, oh my goodness, there could be a fix, followed by, oh, by the way, there are severe consequences if it's not done exactly right, and there is so much that we don't know about it that serve as risks. So the article says, as the climate crisis accelerates, there's a desperate need to rapidly reduce carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere, both by slashing emissions and by pulling carbon out of the air. Synthetic biology has emerged as a particularly promising approach. Despite the name, synthetic biology isn't about creating new life from scratch. Rather, it uses engineering principles to build new biological components for existing microorganisms such as bacteria, microbes, and fungi to make them better at specific tasks. By one recent estimate, synthetic biology could cut more carbon than emitted by all passenger cars ever made, up to 30 billion tons, through methods such as boosting crop yields, restoring agricultural land, cutting livestock methane emissions, reducing the need for fertilizer, producing biofuels, and engineering microbes to store more carbon. According to some synthetic biologists, this could be a game changer. Okay, now a quick note. Talks about how 30 billion tons, it's more than has ever been emitted by any, you know, every vehicle ever created. And that is a huge amount. 30 billion tons is massive. That said, we emitted 37 billion tons in 2024, a little bit less than that in 2023. And overall, considering even natural sources of emissions, around 50 billion tons of greenhouse gases are emitted annually. That's also including methane and other sources. So I just kind of want to put a caveat on here as they're talking about this massive amount across all of these different methods that are potentials that maybe one day we could do, but watch out because they come with tons of risks, add up to 1 year's worth of emissions. The article goes on to say, but will it prove to be? Technological efforts to solve the climate problem often verge on the improbably utopian. There's a risk in seeing synthetic biology as a silver bullet for environmental problems. A more realistic approach suggests synthetic biology isn't a magic fix, but does have real potential worth exploring further. Engineering microorganisms is a controversial practice. To make the most of these technologies, researchers will have to ensure it's done safely and ethically, as my research points out. What potential does synthetic biology have? Earth's oceans, forests, soils, and other natural processes soak up over half of all carbon emitted by burning fossil fuels. Synthetic biology could make these natural sinks even more effective. Some researchers are exploring ways to modify natural enzymes to rapidly convert carbon dioxide gas into carbon into rocks. Perhaps the best-known example is the use of precision fermentation to cut methane emissions from livestock. Because methane is a much more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide, these emissions account for roughly 12% of total warming potential from greenhouse emissions. Bioengineered yeasts could absorb up to 98% of these emissions. After being eaten by cattle or other ruminants, these yeasts block production of methane before it can be belched out. Synthetic biology could even drastically reduce how much farmland the world needs to produce, by producing food more efficiently. Engineered soil microbes can boost crop yields by at least 10 to 20%, meaning more food from less land. Now, the main crux of the article here is that synthetic biology can be used to modify microbe and algae species to increase their natural ability to store carbon in wetlands and oceans. This approach is known as natural geoengineering. So then the article poses the question, okay, but what's the problem? As researchers have pointed out, using this approach will require a rollout at massive scale. At present, much work has been done at smaller scale. These engineered organisms need to be able to go from petri dishes to industrial bioreactors and then safely into the environment. To scale, these approaches have to be economically viable, well-regulated, and socially acceptable. That's easier said than done. First, engineering organisms comes with a serious risk of unintended consequences. If these customized microbes release their stored carbon all at once during a drought or bushfire, it could worsen climate change. It would be very difficult to control these organisms if a problem emerges after their release, such as if an engineered microbe began out-competing its rivals, or if synthetic genes spread beyond the target species and do unintended damage to other species and ecosystems. It will be essential to tackle these issues head-on with robust risk management and forward planning. Yeah, I mean, this first issue, there's three of them that they mention here. This is the first one, and basically the idea that we could genetically modify these species, send them out into the wild, and we don't really know how they would react with their ecosystems. What if those synthetic genes spread beyond the target species? What if that does damage to other species and ecosystems? What if it outcompetes its rivals because it's too strong? This could have major effects on wider ecosystems and food chains that reverberate across the globe. Second, synthetic biology approaches will likely become products. It's always about money, right? To make these organisms cheaply and gain market share, biotech companies will have an incentive to focus on immediate profits. This could lead companies to downplay actual risks to protect their profit margins. Regulation will be essential here. So we got good old capitalism kicking in. Third, some worthwhile approaches may not appeal to companies seeking a return on investment. Instead, governments or public institutions may have to develop them to benefit plants, animals, and natural habitats, given human existence rests on healthy ecosystems. So again, we're talking about the appeal to companies and how this has to benefit corporations, et cetera, et cetera. And as we have seen in basically every iteration in the past, which has brought us to this point, is that corporations are God. They are what matters. They are who we will please because they are in power, because money speaks, and because ultimately the decision lies in their hands. So the article asks, which way forward? These issues shouldn't stop researchers from testing out these technologies, but these risks must be taken into account as not all risks are equal. Unchecked climate change would be much worse, as it could lead to societal collapse, large-scale climate migration, and mass species extinction. Large-scale removal of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere is now essential. In the face of catastrophic risks, it can be ethically justifiable to take the smaller risk of unintended consequences from these organisms, but it's far less justifiable if these same risks are accepted to secure financial returns for private investors. As time passes and the climate crisis intensifies, these technologies will look more and more appealing. Synthetic biology won't be the silver bullet many imagine it to be, and it's unlikely it will be the gold mine many hope for. But the technology has undeniable promise. Used thoughtfully and ethically, it could help us make a healthier planet for all living species. And there again, once again at the end, it brings up this idea that it's not justifiable if these same risks are accepted to secure financial returns for private investors. Is the actual intent by which these things will be rolled out to help solve the climate, or does it become another mode of greenwashing? Does it become another way for oil technologies and oil companies to justify continuing business as usual? To say we can continue drilling for oil, we can increase the production of coal, the consumption of natural gas, because, hey, we're also investing in this green synthetic algae that will increase carbon capture. If you asked me and, my pessimistic view of not just the future, but of the way things work, that is the direction that I would see this heading. Only time will tell. Thanks for being here. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.